Yud Dalet. We're holding in the middle of the parak. We're about to discuss the the curses that Kadosh Baruch Hu brought on, let's say it in order, on the Nachash, Chava, Adam, and then the Eretz. And we said last week that some midrash, the recounting of Parashas Bereishis, says that the Kadosh Baruch Hu brought altogether 39 curses, 10 on the Nachash, 10 on Chava, 10 on Adam, and 9 on the Eretz. Pirkei Avos doesn't necessarily go with the 9 on the Eretz, but the point is that he says that there's 39 curses, and just like Adam Rishon, when he was Chayte, he brought 39 curses into the world, so too when any person does an Avera, so he gets 39 lashes. That's the Mida Keneged Mida, that's the Yisrael over there. So the first thing, one of the last things we said last week was that when Kadosh Baruch Hu gave them their gzeras of the curses, what's going to be on them? So Kadosh Baruch Hu brought all three of them together, Adam, Chava, and the Nachash, and then he said what the curses are going to be. So the Radal says, why did Hashem have to bring them together? So in order to understand the Radal's answer, we'll have to see the rest of the parak, and then we can go back and see, appreciate better what the Radal is saying. But that's just a question to keep in mind. Fine. So we're up towards V'hivi Shlashtan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought all three of them. V'gazar Aleihem Gzer Din Meitesha Klolos V'mavis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Gezer, he decreed on each one of them 9 curses and death. So 10 curses altogether. V'hippil is Samuel, and Kadosh Baruch Hu brought down Sami. V'esakas Shalai Mimakim Kedushosan Min Shomayim. Kadosh Baruch Hu brought down Sami from his high place, his high role position in the heavenly court. Kadosh Baruch Hu brought him down, and all his people, his kat shalo, his followers, whatever, from their high place, their holy place in Shemayim, Hashem brought them down, that they're not so holy anymore. Fine. V'kotzatz ragloi raglov shel nachash. Kadosh Baruch Hu cut down the feet of the snake, because according to Chazal, beforehand, before the chait, the snake would walk on like 2 feet, like a human walks, and afterwards Hashem took down the legs of the snake. Ve'eroi mikol hachaya u'mikol habehema. And Kadosh Baruch Hu cursed this. Let's count. Okay, katzas raglav shalachosh. That's the first one. He cut down their feet. Second one. Eroi mikol hachaya u'mikol habehema. Kadosh Baruch Hu cursed the nachash from all the chayas and all behemas. That's the second curse. Ufakarolav sheyeh mafshid es oyoy pam achas l'sheva shanim b'itzavein gadol. Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded about the Nachash that he's going to have to shed his skin once every 7 years with a lot of pain. And Chazal also tell us, interestingly, that a snake gives birth once every 7 years. The gestation period of a snake is 7 years. It's a Gemara in Bechoris. It's also a Medrash Rabbah. So some versions of this list have the fact that it gives birth once every 7 years as one of the curses. Could be these two things are related. The Radal brings that later on in Perek Lamed Daled in Pirkei Abeliezer, it says that when the snake sheds its skin, so it's in such pain that it screams so loud that the voice of the snake can be heard from one end of the world to the other end of the world. And that doesn't literally mean that, but it just means that it's in a lot of pain.
Could be with that pain it gives birth.
Oh, so the Sefer Tzioni from Rabbeinu Menachem Tzioni, one of the Rishonim, it's probably one of the earliest Kabbalah Sfarim on Chumash. So the Sefer Tzioni, he says that he says once every 6 years that it sheds its skin, not once every 7 years. And he says that the way he says it is that, and it goes through such pain that the pain are like chavli leda, like birth pangs, so he relates the two things sort of in the way you said it. I don't know. I assume so. So you're saying, what's the curse on the male snakes?
No.
I don't know.
The female snake.
Fine, so that's the third curse.
Because they both shed the skin.
What's the Indian of 7 years? What 7 years that it sheds its skin or gives birth 7 years? What's the Indian of 7 years? The Rekeach, the Pirush Rekeach HaLatayr says that it's a midah keneged midah, because the snake brought about the curses on Chava, And one of the curses we're going to see on Chava is Dam Nida, that she becomes Tameh for 7 days. So the snake who brought about that the woman is going to be Tameh for 7 days, his Einish is that he has to go through this suffering once every 7 years. Or we find an Indian of days corresponding to years, like by the Meraglim, that they were Chayte, it took them 40 days to go around Eretz Yisrael, and they came back and the Einish was that then they have to be stuck in the desert for 40 years. So days and turn into years when we're talking about Einshim. So it's an interesting idea. But so that's the third curse. The fourth one, they would crawl or wiggle on the ground, on its mayav, on its stomach, on the ground. And it can't walk anymore, it's going to have to wiggle on its stomach. Umacholoi mishap, that's the fourth one. Umacholoi mishapach b'mayav l'ofar. And the food in its mouth turns into dust. Now, this is interesting. What does it mean that the food in its mouth turns into dust? In its innards turns into dust? So there's a Gemara in Yuma on Daf Ayin Hey Manaf that says that whatever a snake tastes, he could taste the most tastiest food in the world, it'll always taste like dirt to him. That's a curse. That's one of the curses of the snake. That whatever it tastes like dirt. It means if you can eat caviar and it also tastes like dirt. It doesn't enjoy it. I don't know, but apparently the Gemara is saying that it doesn't enjoy it. Mm. There's a few this idea comes up in a few other places. There's a Gemara in Erechin that says that Bali Lashon Hara are like snakes. People who speak Lashon Hara are like snakes. Why? Because when a snake bites, it doesn't get a physical hanah from it. Especially if we're saying now that whatever it tastes, it doesn't even taste good. Everything tastes the same. So it bites a person, it doesn't get any hana out of that. So too, when a person says Lashon Hara, you don't get a physical hana. It's not like a piece of ham or a piece of erva that you get a physical pleasure from it. This is, it tastes like dirt. Everything tastes like dirt. So Lashon Hara also, a person doesn't get a physical hana from it.
Yeah, but a person gets hana from talking like a hana, otherwise
you
wouldn't.
Yeah, fine, a person might get hana, but it's not a physical hana. It doesn't cause oxytocin in his brain to start flowing.
By a snake, there's no chewing involved. A snake, the eating is just swallowing.
Right.
That's it.
It doesn't savor the taste.
It doesn't stay in the mouth, nothing, there's no. Twice, he bites, or is it a taste? But other than that, he just opens his mouth and he needs the feeling of being full. But my question is not regarding it. It has to do with, if he just needs to feel full, how does he distinguish between what's healthy for him, what he's going to be able to digest?
That Hashem put in the Teva that animals have some sort of...
Be able to distinguish.
Yeah. Or maybe, you know, it's
not going to eat a rock.
A snake is not so complicated like a person that you need all different types of nutrients and protein, this and that. A snake could survive on less complicated stuff. I don't know exactly, but another Gemara says that Masechus Yuma, Daf Chaf Bezim and Bezim on the bottom, on the top of Chaf Gemara, it says, Kol Tamar Chacham She'ena Nekim Menoiter Kenachash, Eni Tamar Chacham. Any Tamar Chacham who doesn't do revenge like a snake is not called a Tamar Chacham. And the Gemara says, it's also to do revenge. So he says, no, it's only also to do revenge when we're talking about money.
Talking about money?
Money. But when we're talking about, let's say, what's called Sar Duguf, or when you're talking about, like, doing cover, whatever, so it could be that it is motive to take revenge. So what does that mean? You're supposed to take revenge like a snake? So Rabbi Steiner is probably thinking, yeah, he knows this snake, what's the Mumba?
Black Mumba
snake. That if you killed its relative or something, it goes after you for revenge, right? You said something like that?
You hurt him or its family, he tracks the person down.
Right. So the Chidah says a different pshat. The Chidah says, in his Pirush on Sefer Chassidim, the Chidah writes that the pshat in this Gemara is like what we were saying before. That anything that a snake tastes, it always tastes like dirt. Meaning that the snake, whatever it does, it doesn't get any hana out of it. So when the Gemara is saying that Tamachacha is supposed to take Nekim B'Neiter Kenachash, it means that in certain instances when it's mutter to take revenge, they say revenge is sweet, or revenge is a dish best served cold. The Gemara is not saying that you should take that type of revenge. The Gemara is saying you should take revenge like a snake. You don't taste it. You're not doing it for yourself. You're not getting any pleasure out of it. You're doing it because, you know, this person did something wrong and he deserves, you know, this ownership.
Kavatara, Kavat Shemai.
But that was the fourth one, right? The fifth curse of the snake. Now this word umararis psanim. Umararis psanim is like a bitter ingredient. Yeah. So either it means that the food in his stomach turns into dirt and bitter ingredients, or the word bitter ingredients is going on the next line. Umararis psanim umaves befiv. Bitter ingredients and maves, death, is in the mouth of a snake, because a snake has eres, or how do you say it, venom. It's poisonous. So that's another curse.
But it makes sense, because the snake is on the ground and the food is on the ground, therefore the food is obviously mixed with the earth, so it doesn't matter. If it eats the food, the earth is going to be on the food.
Right. But how many did we say so far? Cousin, I love. 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, this is 6. This was 6, I'm sorry. 7. V'nosan sinah b'nei levin ha'isha. Kadosh Baruch Hu put animosity or hatred between the snake and the woman. Between the snake and Chava. She, or the woman, or womankind. Shiyu reitus imizreisha. That a woman would want, that women want to smash the head of snakes. So that's, yeah. V'acha kol eila ha'mavis. And in addition to all of that, is death. That's 8. So we have 8 curses on the snake. Let's review it very quickly for those who just walked in.
9.
What?
5 to 8. We said 9.
Well, let's count it again. Katzas raglov. He cut his feet. Second, he was cursed from Mikol Chayam, Mikol Behema. Third, he sheds its skin once every 7 years. Fourth, it crawls on its belly on the floor. Fifth, the food turns into dirt in its stomach. Sixth, it has the venom. Seven, the animosity between the woman and the snake. 8 is death. So we're missing 2, because we said that there's supposed to be 10. So the different mepharshim deal with this problem in different ways. The Marzu says that when we said that it's cursed, mikol chaya, mikol behema, he splits that into 2. One is Mikol Chaya, and one is Mikol Behema. Okay, so that gets us 1 more. Also, he splits Meriris Psanim into its own thing. It says, there's the food inside the snake turns into dirt. That's one thing. The second thing is that the food inside of it, while it's being digested by the snake, if you cut a snake open and you eat that food, it's poisonous. That's another curse. Not sure exactly why it's a curse. And then there's the fact that there's venom in him. So he splits that line that we said is 2. He splits it into 3. That gets us another one. Another way you could say it is that another complicating factor is that the Marzu says that the Vilna Gaon in his writings says that the first curse that Hashem cut down its legs, and what we called, I think it was the fifth one. The fourth one, that it crawls on its belly, they should really be reckoned as one curse. It lost its legs, so Mimela is going to crawl on its belly. You know why should it be counted as 2? So then that brings us back to 9 again. So we still need another one. So the Radal says another interesting thing. The Radal says that the first thing that we started off with, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought down Sammy from its high place in Shemayim, down, that's one of the curses on the Nachash. That's what the Radal wants to say. And what's the Pshat? So Pasha Pshat is because we said that Sammy was riding on the Nachash. So Sammy and the Nachash are sort of going together. So when Sammy lost his position, so that's a curse on the Nachash. It's more than that. In Rabbeinu Bechaye, in Parshas Bereishis, he says that the whole Koyach, we said that the Nachash spoke to Chava and tried to convince her to eat from the Eitz Hadas. So he says the Rabbeinu Bechaye says that the whole koyach that the snake had to speak came from the fact that it was associated with Sammy, which was a high level malach. So when the Kadosh Baruch Hu brought down Sammy from its lofty position, So the snake lost its ability to speak. So that's the curse on the Nachash. The first curse on the Nachash is that it lost its ability to speak. And that's what the Medrash means when it says Hipil Esamal, that's the first curse. And in fact, in the Sefer Tzioni, as the Radal points out, in the Sefer Tzioni, when it goes through the curses on the Nachash, the first one is Shenistam Piv Miladaber, that its mouth was closed from speaking. Or in the Sefer Dvarim Rabbah, the Lashon is that Shenichras L'Shoinai, its tongue was cut out, meaning it couldn't speak anymore. That's another way of adding another one more curse to come up with the Cheshbon of 10. Okay, so basically that's how we come up with the Cheshbon of 10. And
Anaka does have a tongue, but you can't use the tongue to speak anymore.
Right, you can't use it to speak. Nichras L'Shoina doesn't literally mean that his tongue was cut. It means like more figuratively that it was cut off and his tongue has no purpose. Or has no purpose in regard to speech. But that more or less is the sugya of the curse on the Nachash. There's other svarim have different gersos of exactly what the 10 curses on the Nachash are, but we don't have to get into that necessarily right now. Now we'll get into the 10 curses on Chava. V'nasan le'isha teisha klalais v'moves. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to the woman 9 curses plus death. So also the woman got 10 curses. What are the 10 curses? Inoy dam nidasa. Number 1 is the pain of having dam nida. Number 2 is dam bisuleha, the blood of her virginity. That's the second curse. V'inoy heroyan habeten, and the pain of having pregnancy. The next one is v'inoi leida, the pain of giving birth. The next one is v'inoi gidul bonim, the pain of raising children, growing pains. V'roisha v'chusa ke'evel, and her head is covered like a woman, like a person who's in a velus. When a person is in a velus, like they cover their hair, it's a sign of mourning. So when a woman covers her hair, it's sort of like in the Glacia world, whatever. When a person is in a velus, they cover their hair when they're mourning. It's a sign of mourning. So a Jewish woman always covers her hair as if she's always in mourning.
Well, what's she mourning for?
What's she mourning for? She's not necessarily mourning for anything, but the curse is that she should be like she's in mourning. No, last week we spoke about exactly what's the Indian that a woman's covering her hair for, why she grows long hair and why she covers her hair. The next line is a shtickle tricky. The next line is a shtickle tricky. V'ena megalacha seisa ela miznus. That's the way our version reads it. She only cuts her hair or shaves her hair from znus. What does that mean? She only cuts her hair from znus. So the Bayis HaGadol, the pirsha that you have on the bottom over there, learns it kipshutai, which is, in my eyes, a pella. It says that a woman only cuts her hair if there's a chashash that she was mizana, and her husband brings her to the Beis HaMikdash, like by a saita, and she drinks the Beis Saita, we talked about in last week's parsha, and it says, Ufora is Reisha Isha. You reveal the head of the woman. But it doesn't say anything about shaving her hair, it just says you reveal it. So I'm not sure what's the saying, Megal Achas Isa. Maybe the best pshat probably in what it's saying here in the Medrash is that it should say take out the ches from the word megalachas. You read it as ve'ena megalas yisayel abizus. She only reveals her hair from znus, from a chashash of znus. But now that she only cuts her hair from znus, otherwise I don't know how to read it. At least the way we have it over here in Yalkut Shemayni in Parshas Bereishis when it brings this down. So there it says. Instead of this line, it says umigadalas sear kelilis. She grows her hair long like a certain type of demoness. And actually that line was a different line. What it says over there in Yalkut Shemayni is it says ena migala roisha ki'im belelis, that she only reveals her hair at night. That's what it means. That's what it says over there. Yalkut Shemayni says what I said before about growing her hair long, says that in addition to the 10 things that we said. It should come out over there that there is 11 curses, not 10. Okay, whatever.
Part of the way to make a satyr feel really embarrassed to take her hair off and cut it off.
Uncover it, but not to shave it.
Right.
Rav Chaim Falaji suggests over here in the Parachon on Pirkei Avos, he suggests changing the gear so from Eino Megalachas Asei Ela Miznus to Eino Megalachas Asei Ela Min Nazirus. That the only reason why a woman would ever cut her hair is if she becomes a Nazir. It's a Mishnah Mesachas Nazir, Perek Dalet Mishnah Hey, that it says that if a woman becomes a Nazir, she has to shave her hair at the end like every Nazir. So he says that that's the only reason why a woman would ever cut her hair. Okay. Now this is another interesting one. Rotsa es oznach ke'eved oylam uchashivcha shi b'sharesa, says Baila. A woman has her ear is pierced like an eved oylam and like a shivcha, a maid servant who works for her husband. Meaning, there's a halacha by an eved that when a person becomes an eved ivri, so he works for his master for only 6 years and then he goes free. If he wants to stay after 6 years, what's the halacha? So the pasuk says, "Parshas Mishpatim, Rosa Adonav Esos Zab Amartzeah V'Avodoy Le'Olam." You pierce his nose, his ear, over here in his ear, not over here. The Gemara says it's over here, not over here. You pierce his ear next to the door, and he becomes his slave for the rest of his life. Actually, it means till Yovel. But it says La'ilam. So the halacha, the piercing of an ear by an eved symbolizes the fact that he's going to be an eved for La'ilam. So the Medrash is saying a woman also, her ear is also pierced. Was her ear pierced? Yeah, she wears an earring. That's what the Marzu says. She wears an earring. She wears it over here. But the Gemara says that by an eved it's over here. Okay. But it's the same idea that there's a hole in the ear represents some sort of servitude, that the kilo woman is like a servant of her husband in some ways. Right? That's the eighth curse. V'ena nemenes be'edus, and woman is not believed in edus. Edus is dafka to men, usually. That's the ninth one. V'acha kol eila hamoves, and in addition to all these nine curses is death, which is the tenth curse. And that, those are the 10 curses of a woman.
That doesn't say that a woman got dark color. So dark color means you can't trust her in Aedus.
A woman has a dark color, so yeah. A dark color means you can't trust her in Aedus? What do you mean?
Means that her mind is not strong.
Das color.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, das color. I thought you said dark color. No. Yeah, das color. Yeah, we spoke about that a few weeks ago when we said, what does it mean that Nashen Daitan Kalas? That they work more with emotion than with intellect.
Right.
So when you're working with emotion, you can be easily swayed,
right.
Even if it doesn't, if it's not, it doesn't have to do with the truth or not truth. It has to do with what you feel at that moment.
Right. Okay.
But when did we speak about that? That was Perek Mem Aleph. We spoke about that. Right. Okay. I made this nice chart over here. You got one last week? You have one. Okay. Here's a nice chart over here of. Sit on one side of the chart is the 10 curses of Chava. So I brought down 6 different ways of counting the 10 curses. So we went through Pirkei Eliezer. That's the second column. The first column is the Gemara and Mesachas Erevin Daf Kufam and Beis. The Gemara says the same 5. The first 5 are the same as Pirkei Eliezer. Dam Nida, Dam Besulim, Tsar Gidul Bonim, Tsar Ha'ibur, Tsar Leid. The first 5 are the same. The first 5 is Pirkei Eliezer. The 6th curse in the Gemara is that she desires her husband when he goes out, and there's nothing she could do about it because he's going out. The 7th one is that a woman's desires remain in her heart, and she has very difficult time expressing her desires verbally. She can only feel what she wants, but she can't say exactly what she wants, while a man can say straight out what exactly he wants. The Gemara says, "Atufa ke'evel." It's also she's wrapped up like someone in a veil. Her head is wrapped up, like we said, Pirkei Eliezer. Menudo mikol adam. She's sort of excommunicated from people because people don't necessarily interact with women. Men don't necessarily interact with women. Chavusha bebeis asurin. In general, women are sort of stuck in their house, like a person who's incarcerated in jail. Chavusha bebeis asurin. So those are the 10 curses the way the Gemara reckons them.
And then what happens with
Aves is not the Gemara didn't consider that one of the 10. But there's an interesting difference between Pirkei Eliezer and the Gemara. No, also the Tzini also does. And also, maybe also the last one. There's an interesting difference in the Gemara and the Pirkei de Eliezer. In the first five, it was all the same. Damnida, Dambesulim, pregnancy, birth, and raising children. But the difference between the Gemara and Pirkei de Eliezer is that the Gemara reckons raising children, the tsar of raising children before pregnancy and birth, while Pirkei de Eliezer mentions pregnancy and birth before raising children. So what's the difference? What's happening over here? Why is the Gemara? It's not the Gemara is a bit difficult. Why does it say talk about the pain of raising children before it talks about the pain of pregnancy and birth? Usually, you raise the children after you have pregnancy and birth, not beforehand. So what's happening over here? So if you look at footnote 4, so I bring down an interesting idea. The pasuk says about by the curses of Chav, it says, right? That's the pasuk, and from that pasuk, that's where we darshan the different curses. So the question is, where do we darshan the curse of raising children? Do we darshan it from the pasuk of itzvuneich, your sadness, let's call it, that's tsar gidul banim, or do we darshan it from the pasuk of be'etzev teldi banim? Banim is a remez to the Indian of gidul banim. So Rashi al Torah and the Gemara say that the Indian of Gidul Banim, raising children, is learned from Itzvudeich. So because of that, they understand that Itzvudeich, Tzar Gidul Banim, raising children, is mentioned before pregnancy and birth. Why? So comes along the Taz. The Taz has a sefer on Chumash called Divrei David. The Taz writes that the Pshat is because we're talking to Chava. And by Chava, Cain and Hevel were already born by the time that we're talking about these curses coming to her. They were already born before the chet of the Eitz Hadas. So she's going to reach the klala of raising kids before she reaches the klala of pregnancy and birth. Because she already has kids. Now the question is raising them. That's what the Taz says.
Okay.
So what about the Pirkei de Eliezer that says Tzar Gidul Banim afterwards? Or Bereishis Rabbah in Parsha Chaf darshans the Indian of Tzar Gidul Banim for the pasuk of Banim Be'etzev Teldi Banim. Banim's the Gidul Banim. So you have to, we have to say that they understood that Cain and Hevel were not yet born by the chet of the Eitz Hadas. And we spoke about this in Perek Yud Aleph, I believe it was, when we talked about with the chronology of the events that happened on the day that Adam and Chava were born. We mentioned there that it's a machlokes already between different midrashim if Cain and Hevel were born yet by the time of the Eitz Hadas. And it seems that machlokes is going to also be the same machlokes over here. How you understand Tzar Gidul Banim? Do you consider it, you reckon it before pregnancy and birth or after pregnancy and birth, and how exactly which pasuk you learn it from? The Mefarshim say this, the Eitz Yosef and Yaakov over there, and the Chida also says such a thing. Well, there's another pshat also. The question is why the Gemara says that, why does it mention Tzar Gidul Banim, raising children, before it mentions pregnancy, the tsar of pregnancy and birth, the pain of pregnancy and birth? So the Sefer Kilas Yitzchak al Torah in Parshas Bereishis brings in the name of Chaim Volozhiner another Tarts. Says that the whole tsar of these three things, the way it works together, is tsar. First, you have kids, and then you have more kids. And while you're still working on the tsar gidul banim of the first kid, you also have to deal with the suffering of the pregnancy and birth of the next kid, which makes the curse even worse. That's the way the Rav Chaim Volozhiner says it. It's worse of a curse. Because you're going through pregnancy, and also you have to deal with the Tzar Gidul Banim.
Yeah.
So that's why it says Tzar Gidul Banim first, and then it says pregnancy. It's like first you have Tzar Gidul because you have the first kids, and then the pregnancy, which is even worse pregnancy because you also deal with Tzar Gidul Banim at the same time.
But it gets even more complicated because she knows that the baby in her womb is going to
get. It's also going to, yeah. So it's like a vicious cycle.
Right.
That's what Chaim Volozhiner says. The Ben Ish Chai in his Sefer Ben Yoyada and Mesachas Erevin also says the same teretz Pachos V'Yeser. Then he says another teretz also that Tzar Gidol Bonim lasts longer than the Tzar of pregnancy and birth. So the Gemara said it first because it takes a longer time to get rid of.
Okay.
Another point over here is that in the Medrash Bereishis Rabbah over there, it says, could be there's a typo here. It says Parsha Chaf earlier and it says Parsha Beis later. So I'm not sure which one. Where I think it's a Parsha Beis. Parsha Beis, not Parsha Chaf, like I said before. It says the first five things in the Gemara are the same first five things in the Pirkei of Eliezer. In the Medrash, it says it a little bit differently. It says Tzar Ibur, the Tzar of pregnancy. Tzar Ha'idui, we don't know what Tzar Ha'idui means. Tzar Ha'nefalim, the Tzar of having a miscarriage, Le'elena. Tzar Le'a, the Tzar of giving birth. And Tzar Gidol Bonim, the Tzar of raising children. So what's Tzar Idui? What does that mean? So the Mufarshim don't know what it means. They give it different explanations. The Marzu says that it sounds like in Targum Unkelus, in Chumash, whatever it says, a Lashon of Heraya, of becoming pregnant, since it's used a Lashon of Idui. So it says that Idui seems like it means pregnancy, but we just, the first one of the five that we mentioned, it's Tzar Ibor, which is the Tzar of pregnancy. So you can't say that Idui also means pregnancy, because Ibor and Idui can't mean the same thing, because we're listing them as different things. So the Marzu and the Eitz Yosef instead favor the Pshat of the Sefer HaOruch, which says that Tzar Idui means like Idan, which means like a time, which is referring to the vest of Nidus. That's how they understand it. The Imri Yosher says, no, it really is talking about pregnancy, like it sounds like from Targum Oglas. It says that the Ibor and Idui are talking about two different stages. Ibor is stam during pregnancy, that a woman is feeling sick or whatever. And Idui is the end of pregnancy, which is it's even worse. So that's a different stage. It's two different curses. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning this is because of the Radal's Pshat, and I have an interesting aura on the Radal. The Radal, on Medrash Rabbah over there, and also in his Pirush over here on Pirkei d'Eliezer, says different Pshat Idui. It says Idui is the moment that she becomes pregnant. That when the egg becomes fertilized, apparently there's some sort of pain that happens right then. That's what the Radal wants to say. That's what Idui means. So it does mean pregnancy, but it's not the same thing as pregnancy that we said Tzar Ibur. I'm not so much masking to this pshat, because first of all, I never heard of such a thing that there's a certain pain that comes exactly at the moment of fertilization. Never heard of such a thing. And in fact, there's a Gemara that seems to say that it's not true. The Gemara is Soita Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. The Gemara says that Amram and Yocheved were originally married, and when Paro made a decree that all the firstborns have to be thrown into the sea, so Amram decided, you know what, I'm getting divorced, because why should I get married? Why should I be married? There's no point. I'm going to have kids, I'm going to go throw it in the sea. Right? So they got divorced, and then the Gemara says that Miriam went back to her father and said, you're worse than Paro, because Paro only made a gzera on the male kids. You made exer the female kids. And when Gemara says that when Amram got divorced from his wife, every guy got divorced his wife, because Amram was the god of the door. So they all followed suit. So Amram said, you know what? You're right. So he says he remarried Chevet. So Gemara says that when he remarried her, she was already 3 months pregnant with Moshe Rabbeinu from when they were married before. And then because of that, the Mitzrayim, when they were cheshbening, you know, when to see if there's a kid in their house, they were 3 months off, because they only counted from when they got remarried. They didn't realize that she was already 3 months pregnant.
That's a different shot than he only took 6 months.
Right.
That's the other, yeah. Somewhere else it says
it. Yeah. So that's why she had an extra 3 months to hide him before the Mitzrayim realized that Yocheved had a baby.
Wow. Right?
Now, so the Gemara asks a question. This is the whole discussion of the Gemara. The Gemara asks a question. The Gemara says that it says in the pasuk, "Vatar Isha v'Vayelach Ish Beis Levi v'Tikachas Bas Levi v'Vatar Isha v'Telet Bein." A man from Beis Levi went and took the daughter of Levi. Amram married Yocheved, who's his aunt, whatever, and she became pregnant and she gave birth to a son. But the Gemara says, wait a minute, she didn't become pregnant. She was already pregnant before they got remarried. So we're just saying that she became pregnant. So the Gemara says that you have to say that it's coming to teach us a lesson. That it says she became pregnant right next to the fact that it says that she gave birth. Because really she gave pregnant before. The Gemara says, V'havis mi boro beit lasa yarchi mi kara. Ah, she was already pregnant 3 months beforehand. So the Gemara says, Amar b'yuda b'zvina. Makish le'dasa lahi rasa. The Torah is coming to make a hekesh, a juxtaposition of her birth to the pregnancy. Ma ha'yurasa shalei betzar, just like she became pregnant without any pain, af le'dasa shalei betzar, so too she gave birth without any pain. And the Gemara finishes off and says, there's a curse on Chava that women are supposed to have pain when they give birth. So the Gemara says, mikan l'nashim tzidkanes shalei hayu bepiska shel Chava. From here you learn that Nashim Tzidkanias, righteous women, are not in the Gzera of Chava. Righteous women don't have the Gzeras of Chava. That's what Adkan Divrei Gemara. So what's the Gemara saying? The Gemara is saying that from the fact that the Torah puts together her becoming pregnant and giving birth, comes to teach us that just like when she became pregnant, she didn't have Tzar, so when she gave birth, she also didn't have Tzar. So what does that tell you? That Stam, a woman who becomes pregnant, doesn't have Tzar. And the Gemara is learning out, becoming pregnant, Yocheved's giving birth from her becoming pregnant. And the assumption is that becoming pregnant, you don't have Tzar. So how could the Radal say that Tzar Idui means the Tzar of the moment that you become pregnant? That's not true. The Gemara seems to be saying that there's no such thing. Forget that is the assumption over there, is that you don't have pain when there is no Tzar. Not sure what the Pshat of the Radal is. Okay, that's...
But we might say what you said, that the fact that she's naked, she doesn't experience pain.
The what?
That...
Right, no, but the Gemara is assuming that a woman who becomes pregnant, she doesn't have tzar.
Okay.
Right? And then the Gemara is saying that, and Yocheved, from the fact that the Torah puts together her becoming pregnant and giving birth, that teaches us that not only did she not have tzar when she became pregnant, but also she didn't have tzar when she gave birth. Usually women have tzar when they give birth because of the klal of chava. So that the Gemara says that you see that Nashim Tzidkanias don't have the klal of chava. That's talking about the giving birth, not talking about the having pain when they become pregnant. The assumption is always that when you become pregnant, there's no such thing as tzar.
But the assumption is also that all Jewish women are tzedekah.
Right. So that's that was footnote 6 over there on the chart. If you look on the chart, I brought down Avos Rabbi Nosson. You know what Avos Rabbi Nosson is? If you heard of it, it's like we have Misachas Avos is Mishnayos, Pirkei Avos, Misachas Avos. So that's like Mishnayos. So Avos Rabbi Nosson is sort of like Gemara on Misachas Avos. That's more or less what it is. It brings down more stories and Mishalim that have to do with the Mishnayos of Avos. It's like a commentary on Avos. It's Miyuchas to Rabbi Nosson, who is a Tana. Rabbi Nosson was one of the Tana of the later generations. He was a friend of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Nosson and Rabbi Meir were good friends. Rabbi Nosson was actually there's a very interesting thing. Rabbi Nosson was one of the Rebbeim of Rabbi Yudah Nasi, who wrote the Mishnayos. He was one of his teachers, Rabbi Nosson. And there's a rule that whenever there's a machlekes between somebody and Rabbi, the halacha is always like Rabbi. There's one exception. When there's a machlokes between Rebbe and Rebbe Nosson, halacha is like Rebbe Nosson. And even more than that, there's another rule that in general, when there's a stam mishnah, we pass it like the stam mishnah, right? If an anonymous mishnah, we usually pass it like the anonymous mishnah. But one of the big exceptions is that if Gemara says that the anonymous mishnah reflects the opinion of Rebbe, and Rebbe Nosson argues on Rebbe, we pass it like Rebbe Nosson, even if Rebbe Nosson's not mentioned in the mishnah. Interesting.
Stam Mishnah is
not
Rebbe, right?
Stam Mishnah is Rebbe Meir, but Rebbe was the one who decided to make it into a Stam Mishnah. Yeah. Obviously, Rebbe Nosson is printed in the back of Misachas Avodah Zarah in the regular print of Gemaras. So there's actually two Nuschais of Obviously Rebbe Nosson. What's called Nusach Aleph, that's the standard one printed in the back of the Gemara, and then if you look at the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th column, so there's another Avos Rabbi Nosson, Nusach Beis, was printed later. It's a separate sefer. Now they have also different sfarim that print both the Nuschais of Avos Rabbi Nosson. So Nusach Aleph of Avos Rabbi Nosson more or less says the same thing as the Gemara. more or less, maybe in a little bit different order. And what were you going to ask?
Yeah, I wanted to know what
about yeah, there's two nuschos. The Ovis Rebbe Nosson Nusach Beis, let's read it. It reckons the 10 curses a little bit differently. First it says Dam Nida, but what's the point of Dam Nida? Because she's Nezufa Mi Besa, Grusha Mi Baila. It's not Stam. The way that it says it in Nusach Aleph of Ovis Rebbe Nosson and Pirkei de Blazer, it seems like the pain of Dam Nida, that's the curse. In Ovis Rebbe Nosson Nusach Beis, it seems to be said that not the pain of Dam Nida, but the fact that she's separate, has to separate from her husband, that the emotional pain, not necessarily the physical pain. That's what the curse is. The second one is that she has to deal with pregnancy for 9 months. The third one is that she has to nurse for 24 months, which is a hassle and also causes different emotional imbalances and chemical things in the body, hormonal imbalances. The fourth one is Shabaila Shelet Ba, that her husband rules over her. The fifth one is that her husband becomes jealous of her and tries to get her to not speak to other men. The sixth one,
what?
To get her to not speak to other men. Okay. Or warns her not to speak to other men. The sixth one is that she becomes old quickly. They age fast, apparently. The seventh one is that she stops giving she stops being able to have children while her husband still would be able to have children. So I guess the point is that, like, you know, if they look at their whole purpose is they want to have children, and now they can't have children anymore while their husband, you know, if he wants, he can go marry someone else and still have children. It's a pain for them. They feel like a suffering. I also brought in the Sefer Tzioni. He brings a similar thing. Shemedes mil in number 5 over there in Sefer Tzioni. It says Shemedes miladas dava v'chayla, that she stops being able to give birth sick and like with a malady. It could be that's referring to the suffering of menopause. I'm not sure. The eighth one in Ovis Rebbe Nosson is that she sits in her house and she's not misparsem. She doesn't become famous because people don't know about her. Ena misparsemes liish. And there's a sefer called Perak Adam Rishon that's printed in Eisim Midrashim. Over there, the Gersa says Ena misparneses liish. She doesn't have a parnasa like Ish.
Oh, nowadays it's not really so much
life. So you would think that what it means is that, oh, she doesn't work. She has to rely on other people. Okay, could be. But Rabbi Feller just said that nowadays it's not true. It is true. If you go take a poll, you'll find that women are generally paid less for the same thing that men are paid more. So she's Eina mitzparnasas ki Ish. She doesn't have a parnasa like a Ish. She has a parnasa, but not in the same darga.
She's more subtle.
Right. Then the next one, number 9, is that she goes Yitzala Shuk Ke'eva Vereshe Bukhusa Ke'eva. She goes outside, she has to cover her hair like a person in mourning. And it says Lefikach Hanashim Yitzis Betchila Lefnei Orin Abes. Therefore, the women go out first in front of a coffin by a funeral. I've never heard such a thing. But apparently the minhag used to be that the women would walk out first. What? That what?
The women go before and the men afterwards. It brings an example from the
Dovramelch.
You don't have to have it. It says he went between, I think, the men and the women to show them that he is speaking at a different point. It's not speaking at this point, but the Chagavah brings it.
Okay,
cool. The king is supposed to go after a funeral. It says he's not supposed to. You don't learn that from Dovramelch. They didn't work to advise the people. They didn't want an uprising. They'll say that he was a part of the murder.
Okay, so we see that the women go out first by the funeral.
Maybe it's not there. but
it sounds good.
But it makes sense, because since they're mourning already, they go out.
Right.
Right.
So like they're more kashur to like Avelus in some way. Right. And then the tenth one in Ovis Rebbe Nosson is that it says that if she was Ibhaisa Kshera, if she was a good wife, a good woman, then Baila Kaiva. Then she predeceases her husband. Her husband ends up burying her. Like the Gemara said, like the manager says by Sarah, that Sarah predeceased Avram Avinu, even though she was younger than him, because she was a ksher. So that's one of the curses, that she predeceases her husband, if she's a ksher. Okay, there's also another sefer.
On number 4, Shabbala Shulit Va.
Yeah.
He's seemingly the only one so far that brought that.
Yeah.
That seems to come from Meforsha Asa. It's Hezra Rabbi Hu.
Ruyim Shabbat. Right.
Why did none of the others bring it if it seems to be so obvious in the Torah?
Because the Gemara understands Ruhu Yim Shalbach as talking about number 7 in the Gemara. Tevas Belev V'ish Teva Befeh. That it's up, that things are totally in him. That's what I guess that's the pshat. I don't know. The last column, we're not gonna read it, but the sefer called Arba Kinyanim, that I found it by mistake actually. It's from a Talmud of the Ritva named Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Shlomo Kaniftanon. I'm not sure exactly who he is, but I think he also wrote a sefer on like Klalim of the Gemara that the Beis Yosef held very stark of that sefer. So he also has a different way of reckoning the 10 curses, but we'll stop with the curses of Chava now and move on to the curses of Adam.
Well, make a correction. It's not brought down over there.
Oh, it's not brought down over there. Okay. But maybe it's brought down somewhere else. Maybe.
Maybe it's a different sefer. I was reading about Agartas on the Gemara.
Uh-huh.
I was reading Shuv. You saw the sefer.
Which one?
Shuv al Agartas.
On In Yaakov or something?
Yeah.
Maybe I've seen it somewhere. From who? Who is it from?
I forgot the author. So I think I'm not the Lord who brings it down.
Uh-huh. Fine. The Rabbi Eliyahu Me'izmir in his Pirush V'loy Oid Ella on Pirkei d'Eliezer goes through all the curses of Chava and says why each one is like a mida k'neged mida of what she did from the repercussions of the chet of the Eitz Hadas, but I don't want to get into that either. But if you're interested in it, you could look at it there.
Complicated.
It's complicated, and some of them are like things that I never really heard of before and stuff. So it's like. And also some of them might contradict other things that we've learned, so I don't want to get into it. But now we're going to Adam Rishon. Haitzi la'Adam, v'gazar alav teisha klaleis v'mavis. Kadosh Baruch Hu took out Adam, and he decreed upon him 9 curses plus death. What are the nine curses plus death on Adam Rishon? Let's count. Kitzar kaychai betumas kari. Kadosh Baruch Hu lessened his koyach with the tumas kari. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos says that the shichva zera of a person is like his koyach, and when the shichva zera comes out, it makes the person weaker and tired or whatever.
That's why the halacha is put away a half an hour.
Yeah. So kitzer koychay. It makes his koychus lessened with tumas keri. Kitzer koymasay b'tumas tashvish hamita. His height was brought down with Tumas Tashmi Shemitah. I don't know what that means.
Used to
be really, really tall, and then now because of Tumas Tashmi Shemitah, not. Zerei Achitim V'Kaitzer Kaitzim. He plants seeds, or he plants, let's say, wheat, but he harvests thorns. So he works for nothing. U'macholei Eisav Aretz Chamehema. And his food is the grass of the land like an animal. No.
What then? Brochus, I think. Yeah. The last third.
4. What?
Adam was supposed to eat like an animal. Then he started crying before Hashem. He said, "I'm gonna be like my animal."
Could be.
You remember that?
No.
He said Adam was crying before Hashem. I don't want to be like my animal. To eat the same food.
Okay.
Wow.
That's 4. 5. Lachmai bidalga. His bread comes with worry. He's a man is always worrying. You know, am I gonna have enough money to buy bread? Or how's it going to work out? And his sustenance comes with Zia, which means, Pashas means sweat. You're like, B'zeya sapacha toich alecha, by the sweat of your brow, sweat. He's gonna sweat. Because it's hard work. You know, you can't just sit back and relax. Right? And in addition to all that is plus death. So if you're paying attention, we don't really have 10 over here. Kitzer kachu tumas kari, kitzer kamasu tumas tashmish mita, zerei achitim v'kaitzer kaitzim. That's 4. Machal etzah aris kibehema. That's 5. Lachmei b'du'aga is 6. Mizayne b'zia 7. Plus death is 8. No, 1 second. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. No, we only have 7. Right? 7. Kitzer Koichah with Tumas Kari is 1. Kitzer Koichah with Tumas Tashmish is 2. Zerei Achitim Kaitzim is 3. Macholei Etzav Aretz 4. Rachmei B'Daga 5. Mizayin Bezia is 6, and the Mabas is 7. There's only 7. We said there's 10. So Mufarshim said that there's obviously some sort of mistake happening over here in Pirkei Avot Eliezer. If you look at the chart, I made the first column is Pirkei Avot Eliezer, and you see that there's only 7 over there. The second column is the Yakut Shemaini, and the Marzu says that the proper girsa in the Pirkei Avot Eliezer is supposed to be what it says in the Yakut Shemaini in Parshas Bereishis. Over there, it splits what we said. Kitzer Koychai and Tumas Nida and Tumas Keri are two things. Kitzer Koychai and Tumas Keri. Kitzer Kamasai and Tumas Tashmish Amita, there's two things also. Kitzer Koymasai, Hashem brought down his height, and also Tumas Tashmish Amita. And then the Yakut Shemaini also adds Tumas Zav. So we just added 3 extra things, and then the rest of it is the same like we had in the Pirkei Avot Eliezer. So that's how you have 10. And the Radal points out to Ashayla that what's the difference between Tumas Keri and Tumas Tashmish Amita? La Halacha, it's all the same thing. There's no difference in Tumas Tashmish Amita and Tumas Keri in Halacha. That's all. So why does the Medrash speak out as two different things? Okay, but those are the 10.
Doesn't it mean that you could have Tashmish without having a deer and would still be Tumas?
Is that true though? I'm not sure. I don't think that's true though.
Couldn't that be pshat?
It could be, but I don't know if it's true. I'm not sure. What? He wants to say that maybe Tashmish Amita without even being Mazriya could also make a person tummy. But I'm not sure if that's true.
Halachically, you still have to.
Yeah?
Hush 3 times after.
Okay, could be. I'm not. It could be that's true. I'm not sure. The Radal definitely doesn't say that it's true, so
okay.
He says he doesn't know what the difference is.
I'm just trying to figure out a pshat.
Right. The Radal in the Ois Lamed Tes, he has a whole Arichas about it. He says even though that there's no halachic difference, it's still reckoned as two different things. Fine. That's the Yalkut Shemaini. Other Mefarshim have other ways of reckoning the 10 curses on men. For example, Bereishis Rabasi, the third column, is a sefer from Miuchas to Ravino Moshe Adarshan, who is one of the people who influenced Rashi. So he says like this. The first one is that he was created with a certain clothing, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away that clothing.
Wait, with the nail, right?
We said the nail. Other midrashim don't say this nail of it. They say like it was a clothing of made out of skin or made out of light, kastus or. The second curse was that he has to eat and drink with omel, with toiling. The third curse is that he's kicked out of Gan Eden and he causes galus for his descendants. The fourth curse is that this is an interesting one, that he eats and he doesn't go to the bathroom. It stays in his stomach. He says, just like the people who ate man in their time, they ate and they didn't have to go to the bathroom. Rashi, Parshas Chukas, Lechem HaKleikel. So also, I guess one of the curses on Dafgan Adam was that he would eat and not go to the bathroom. I don't know why that's a curse. Some people might find that, you know, it's very convenient. You don't have to work.
I think that would be the greatest bracha.
Yeah. It's Mizbarach Bebeav, yeah.
Shout not before the chait in Gan Eden didn't have to go to the bathroom.
Right. The fifth one is Shalat by Yetzer Hara. The sixth one is that Rima Teleah B'maisai. The worms start eating him when he's dead. They eat away at his body. The seventh one is also an interesting one. That the mouth of the chayas and behemas and oifis were closed. Apparently, before the chayt of the Eitz Hadas, all animals could speak. And they had a certain level of intelligence that they would be able to speak. Rabbeinu somebody, I brought this in my book on Lashon HaKodesh. I think it was Rabbeinu Ephraim, Alatera, I believe it was, says that all the animals spoke Lashon HaKodesh. I brought that in my book on Lashon HaKodesh. Before the Chid of the Eitz Hadas. But apparently they all used to be able to speak, and they had a certain intelligence. And when Hashem made it that now they can't speak, the nafkamina, the repercussion of that for Adam Rishon was that it used to be that since they had a certain level of intelligence, they could speak, so whatever Adam Rishon would tell them, they would listen to him and do it. And now that they can't speak, then they weren't listening to what Adam Rishon said anymore. Number 8, that not only did they not listen to him, but It used to be that the chayas shkotzim, chayas shrotzim, ramosim, all the different animals, they used to be scared of Adam Rishon, and now they make people scared of them. Number nine, Hashem made it that katzar yamov, that a person has not so many years to live. And number 10 is that when a person dies, he has to go to give a din in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and reckon everything that he did in his life. Obviously, Rabbi Nosson Nusach Beis says basic, more or less the same idea. He adds one more thing that we didn't have. Which one does he... I forgot which one he takes out. But he adds in Reich Zeya, the smell of sweat. He says is apparently the fact that men have perspiration and body odor or whatever, that comes, that's one of the curses as well. And
most of these things are also by women.
Oh, you're saying good. You actually just reminded me to go back to what I was supposed to go back to. We said in the beginning, but you know what? One more thing. And Sefer Arba Kinyanim that I mentioned from the Talmud of the Ritva, so he says number 2 and number 3 over there is number 2 is the 10 malachas belechem chayim achlasik. There's 10 steps of work that you have to do before you can eat bread, and the next one is 10 steps of malacha that you have to do before you can wear clothing. And he doesn't mention what the 10 steps are, but he says there's 10 steps to make bread and 10 steps to make clothing. A similar thing is found in the Sefer Mazim al Torah from Rabbeinu Yoel, one of the Rishonim, in Parshas Bereishis. It says like this. Okay, you guys have to bear with me a little bit. There's a pasuk, Perek Gimel, pasuk Yud Zayin in Parshas Bereishis. Somebody count the words of the pasuk. I'm going to read the pasuk. Someone count the words. Ulo Adam Omar, and to a man he said, Ki shomato l'koyel yishtecha, since you listened to the voice of your wife, v'toychal min ha'etz. And you ate from the tree. Asher tzivisicha lemar, that it commanded you, saying, Lo yisoychal mimeno, you shall not eat from it. Arura ha'adama bavuracha, the land shall be cursed because of you. Be'itzavayin teichlana, with sadness you're going to eat from it. Kol yimeyechayacha, all the days of your life. 23 words in this pasuk. Yeah. Now, it says Rabbeinu Yoel, three of those words in this pasuk are a lashon of achila, a lashon of eating. It says, V'teichal min ha'etz, and be'itzavayin teichlana. Three times I use the lashon of achilat. But teichal, seichal, and teichlana. Says that's a remez to the three times that we eat on Shabbos. Shabbos shudas, the three sudas that we eat on Shabbos. This pasuk is meramez to, because it says eating it three times by the curse of Adam Rishon. So that's 23 minus those three words. You're left with 20. What's the 20? So he says the 20 words of this pasuk are a remez to the different steps that it takes to make bread and to make clothing. Now he doesn't say 10 and 10 like we just said from the Sefer Arba Kinyanim from the Talmud of Ritva. He says there's 14 steps to make bread and 6 steps to make clothing. Okay? And this pasuk is being meramez to that as one of the curses of Adam Rishon. So my question is like this. Arba Kinyanim said that there's 10 steps to make bread, 10 steps to make clothing. This person, Rabbi Noel, is saying that there's 14 steps to make bread and 6 steps to make clothing. I'm not going to get into the machlekas between the two. But both of them, l'chayra, are very difficult to understand. Because there's an open Mishnah. The Mishnah, Mesechta Shabbos. The Mishnah, Mesechta Shabbos, talks about the 39 malachas of Shabbos. What are the 39 malachas of Shabbos? So, there's different categories of malachas of Shabbos. The three basic categories of malachas of Shabbos are making the steps to make bread, the steps to make clothing, and then the steps to preparing an animal to eat. And then there's a few other things at the end, like writing and erasing and building and stuff like that. Yeah. Okay, so let's take these groups and look at them. The first group is making bread. What are the steps needed to make bread? Zareya, Chayrish, Kreitzer, Na'amer, Dosh, Zaira, Bayer, Teichen, Racket, Lush, Va'ifa. 11 steps to make bread. Not 10 steps. Nobody said that. Nobody said that there's 11 steps. Okay, now making clothing. How many steps are there to make clothing? Glazes is a semer. Malabnoi. Menaptsoi. Tsoivoi. Toive. Mesech. Oisish. Shnei Nirin. Oirik. Shnei Chutin. Poisea. Shnei Chutin. Kosher. matter. Tefer shtei tefiras, v'kareh amenaslit for shtei tefiras. Right? 13 steps to make clothing. This is Mishnah and Avos, Shabbos, Perek Zayin. So we're saying that there's 11 steps to making bread, and was it 13? 14? What did I say?
13
steps to making clothing. That's not like any of the mafreshes that we said. He said 6 and 14. He said 10 and 10. Okay, I don't know. Some is interesting ha'ara.
It could be but, like one in the other.
Could be. Okay, so those are the curses of Adam. If you want, you can go a little bit more into the different differences between the different mafreshes that I brought. But I don't want to get into it. So we began with a question. Why did Hashem bring all three, Chava, Adam, and the Nachash, together and then give them the curses? That's what the Radal asked. So the Radal says an answer. This is the Radal of Isiyot Test earlier in the Perek. It says that the reason why Hashem brought all three together and then set over their curses is because some of the curses of one have to do with the other. So everyone had to be there together. What do we mean? So it says that, for example, the Adam and the Isha had to be there when Hashem said the curses of the Nachash, because in one of the curses of the Nachash is that mankind is going to have animosity towards snakes. So it wasn't just negiah to the Nachash, it was also negiah to Adam and Chava. Right? Why did Adam have to be there when Hashem said the curse of Chava? So the answer is, because one of the curses of Chava is that ve'el isheich tshukaseich. Let's say the way the Gemara understands it, let's say it means that, you know, a man is going to have, the woman is going to want things from the man, and it's going to be totally in him, not totally in her. Right? So the curse of the woman has to do with men. Also, hu yimshol bach, right? The curse of, okay, so why did the woman have to be there when Hashem said the curse is the man? So here, there's a nekuda that you were sort of touching on. The woman had to be there when Hashem said the curse is on the man, because, says the Radal, all the curses that Hashem gave on Adam also applied to Chava. Why? It says because Chava, he brings b'shem the Vilna Gaon in Adar Eliyahu, because Chava ate from the Eitz Hadas twice. She ate it by herself, and then she went again and she ate it with Adam. I think we mentioned this before in Perek Yud Gimel, that she ate it by herself and then she ate it again with Adam because she wanted to be dafka with him. So because she ate it twice, she gets punished double. Once she gets her own set of curses, and all the curses that apply to Adam also apply to her. The way the Radal says this is all the curses that apply to Adam also apply to her. I think it's lav dafka, because the curses of Adam, we said tumas keri, tumas zav, these things don't apply to the isha, they only apply to the man. But he just means that most of the curses also apply to her, about parnasa and these type of things, and death, and Rabbi Felder said the smells, all these type of things, they apply to both men and women equally. Another nukuda is like this. So we said why man and woman had to be there when Hashem said the curse of the snakes. We said why man had to be there for the curse of woman, and why woman had to be there for the curse of man. My question is, the Radal doesn't explain why the snake had to be there by the curses of Adam and Chava. Why did the snake have to be there? What curses of Adam and Chava have to do with the snake?
Well, obviously, they
called
the curse. What do you mean, why?
But the Radal's whole vort is that in the curses, so the curse had to do with you and me, even though the curses, let's say, on me, but you had to be there because it's also relevant to you. My curse has to do with you. So the curse of this of the Adam and Chava, what does that have to do with the snake? Why did the snake have to be there? So I'm going to say like this. The Radal doesn't speak about this point, and maybe he wasn't bothered by it. But I want to say that you could say like this. One of the curses, according to some of the Mefarshim, on Adam Arishan, was that the animals used to be under his domain, and now the animals are not under his domain. And we said that all the curses that were by Adam were also by Chava. So both Adam and Chava, it used to be that the animals were under their dominion, and now the animals are not under their dominion. So included in animals is the snake. So that's the reason why the snake had to be in front of Adam and Chava, had to be there when Adam and Chava were getting their curse. The question is why, okay, but then all the animals should have been there. Maybe they were, I don't know.
Well, didn't they measure that Chaim Tuvel, you're complaining about his luck, and Hashem said, I'll put a sign on your forehead that animals will fear you.
Right.
So, that contradicts what you said before about animals.
One second. He's saying that by Chaim it says that he was worried that if he's going to be wandering, so then the animals are gonna eat him.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So Hashem gave him a special sign that the animals won't eat him.
Right.
So you're saying, no, but we just said that all people, the animals are not under their dominion.
Right.
So every person should be scared that you're gonna get hurt by an animal. So why did Hashem have to make a special siman for Cain? So maybe it's true that all people are really susceptible to animals, right? But the thing is that, are you scared that a lion is going to come and eat you?
No,
because you live in a city. You live in a city. But Cain, when Hashem said you have to move around, and you're going to be always on the move, and you're going to be a nomad. So then you're not always going to be in the city. So there you have to be scared of the lion. So he said, I'm scared the lion's going to come eat you. So he said, fine, I'll put a special sign on you.
In the safari of Africa.
Yeah, but the question is, what letter was it that Hashem put on the forehead of Cain?
Yeah.
But that's a discussion for a different time. There's a lot of different questions. Which letter it was? Okay, I really want to finish the parak, so let's just finish off the last few lines. So we said the curses of the Nachash, the curse of Chava, the curse of Adam. Now we're going to say the curses of the Eretz. In other sources, it brings 9 curses of the Eretz. But Pirkei Avos doesn't have 9 curses for the Eretz, so you don't have to worry about that. There's only going to be sort of 1 curse. Im Adam chata, Eretz machata, shenis arara. If Adam sinned, if man sinned, the land, the Eretz, what did the land sin in that it should be cursed? Why does the land get a curse? Arur hama bavurecho, he said. Why does the land get cursed? It didn't do anything wrong. Says the Medrash, Ela shelo higida hamaisa. Because the Eretz didn't say over the story, lefichach nisara, therefore it's cursed. What does it mean it didn't say over the story? So one pshat is that it didn't tell Kodesh Baruch, the Eretz didn't say to Hashem what Adam and Chava did about eating from the Eitz Hadas. So Rabbi Leomi Izmir says, what do you mean it didn't tell Hashem? Hashem knows everything. What do you have to tell Hashem for? So he says that the pshat is that rather what it means, and I think that's what he means to say, the pshat is that the Eretz didn't tell Adam and Chava off for eating from the Eitz Hadas. It didn't give them Musar, it didn't make a bacha. It was complacent, it didn't say anything, it didn't complain. That's what Rabbi Leomi Izmir's pshat. The Marzu says, no, really it means that the Eretz didn't tell Hashem about what Adam and Chava did. Ah, Hashem knows everything, what do you want? Why do you have to tell Hashem? No! It doesn't mean tell Hashem, it's a complaint to Hashem. Say to Hashem, Hashem, look what these people did. You said not to eat from it, they ate from it. Go do something about this. Big tevea, the covenant of Hashem. They're going against what you said. Make a macha, maybe a kanoi. We find such an in that if a person doesn't make a macha, it doesn't make a protest when someone else does an avera. So Gemara says, "V'kashul ish ba'achiv, ish nitpas b'chatei shel achiv." A person could be caught in the sin of someone else. If someone else is doing an avera and you don't say anything about it, so in some ways Hashem looks at it like you also did that avera to some extent. We find this in many places in Tanakh, different examples of such things, but. So the Eretz didn't make a bacha, didn't complain. We find the pasuk says hechech techech esam isacha v'leis yisal alav chet. Right, you shall surely rebuke your friend, but leis yisal alav, you shouldn't carry an avera. What does it mean leis yisal alav chet? So the famous pshat everyone says is leis yisal alav chet is you should rebuke somebody, but don't do it in a way that you're going to be doing an avera. Like don't embarrass him in public or something like that. That's the famous pshat. But the other pshat that people don't say so much, the Ramban on that pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim says, rebuke somebody, and then you won't be attributed to that aver. If you see somebody being machal Shabbos and you don't say anything, so it's as if you were machal Shabbos. But if you see somebody being machal Shabbos and you say Shabbos, so then Hashem is going to say, okay, you're not with him. He's the machal Shabbos, and you're not from the machal Shabbos. You did your job. So the Eretz should have said something to Adam and Chava when they ate from the Eitz Hadas, but it didn't. So that's why it's cursed. What's the curse of the Eretz?
Thank you.
What's the curse of the Eretz? So the Medrash says like this: Shebishah shebnei Adam chaitin me'averes chamuros, when mankind is doing averes chamuros, serious averes, who shalech magefo levnei Adam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a plague upon people. They're doing averes chamuros, they get a plague. It's a mission of us in Perek Hay. Yeah. The mission says in Avos, "Dever bala olam al misas hamuras b'tayra shelenimsu lebeisim v'aper shvius." When does dever, plague, come to the world? When people are chayvei misas beisim, people do things that they're supposed to get death penalty for, and it's not carried out, or for being over the inyan shmita. So if it's a averus chamuras, people get punished. People get punished with a plague. But when people are doing averes that are not so serious, but they are averes nonetheless, who makes paris aris? Kodesh Baruch Hu afflicts the fruits of the land, like it brings blight and famine or whatever. Bavura avonis bnei adam, because of the sins of man. Shnemar arura ha'adama bavurecha, the land is cursed because of you. It's also a Mishnah there. The Mishnah says, "Rav b'la'ilam, a famine comes to the world, a bitl chumus ma'aser sechala, because of a bitl chumus ma'aser sechala. Chumus ma'aser sechala is an iser, but it's not as chomer as Mrs. Bezdin." The Radha asks, "What about Shemitah?" The Mishnah said that Shemitah is like chamuras, and that's only iser lav, and chumus ma'aser sechala is also iser lav. Maybe mitzvah b'dei shamayim. So why is Shemitah more chomer than chumus ma'aser sechala? The Radha doesn't know why, but maybe the pshat is because Shemitah has to do with Shabbos. You know, Shabbos is a very chomer thing. Shabbos is a kol mechal Shabbos is kilu kofer beikar. A person is mumer le Shabbos is mumer le kol ha'torah kulo. So it's a more chomer thing. So there the punishment goes to people, but when it's averes lo kol kach chamuras, so then the punishment goes to the land. But the point is that Hashem also cursed the land just like it cursed the people. But I think the word is, the Mufreshim speak about this, but I have a slightly different mahalach, what I'm saying over now, that the man, Adam, Chava, and the Nachash, who were mamish involved in the sin, so they got real, ten curses, like real ancient. The land, which wasn't so involved in the sin, it was sort of like, because it didn't make a macha, so it's also implicated in the sin, so it doesn't get such a curse. It gets just like, in certain cases, Hashem will bring a curse to the land. Or even if you learn that there were nine curses on the land, it's only nine, not ten like everyone else. So the land got off a little bit easier. It's implicated, but it's not mamish implicated like everyone else. Okay, that's the end of the parak. Thank you for coming. Have a good Shabbat.